Today's episode of The Audible is brought to you by Trader Joe's, where the crew is on your team. Grab your shopping cart, make a quick snap, and move out of the pocket. Run an option to the demo station. Make an end around to the snacks, then find an eligible receiver to take you to the end zone. Learn more at TraderJoe's.com and at Trader Joe's on Instagram.
Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible. I am Bruce Feldman, joined as always by Stuart Mandel. Stu, this time I am on the East Coast as we tape this late Sunday night slash early Monday morning. I'm in New York City for the College Football Hall of Fame event. You are back in home base in the Bay Area of Northern California. So we finally got the results of the playoff committee's top rankings. And I got to admit, Stu, it's not what I expected them to be.
Yeah, you wonder, looking back now, did we all just kind of talk ourselves into making this more complicated than it is? Because a lot of people, myself, yourself, had convinced ourselves that they were going to elevate Ohio State. If Ohio State beat Wisconsin, they would have more good wins. And we would just kind of casually forget that, oh, by the way, they did lose two games, and one of them was by 31 points. So
to an unranked team.
I filed my column late Saturday night why I thought, and I could go either way, but why I thought they would take Ohio State. And right around that time, maybe right after I filed it, I got a text from our friend Andy Staples, who said, because at this point, everybody's freaking out on Twitter. He said, I kind of think Alabama's going to get in fairly easily tomorrow, but it is fun watching all these people tie themselves in knots. And I thought, oh, maybe he's right. Can I have a do-over?
You know, so Andy, I spent some, I had a few drinks with tonight as well as dinner. And part of his rationale, without putting too many words in his mouth, was the idea of, well, Ohio State, if they played Clemson, you know, it would look just like last year. They don't, you know, they would get blown out. And I said, well, you know what? I don't think it's the playoff committee should be looking as a criteria high up is what the matchup is going to look like. To me, and we've heard a lot about how important it is for conference championships and who you beat. And I feel like you've told me a lot of, you know, who you beat. So it's almost been drilled down. Because remember back when it was when we were in the era of Jameis at Florida State, you know, I was beholden to the year after they won the title because they were still undefeated, but they were kind of looking really shaky when they were doing it. And I think, look, you were proved to be right because they kind of imploded late in the year. I proved to be wrong. But in the case of this, you know, the way I looked at it was, you know, I thought Alabama should be five. And my rationale was, you know, if you look at what Ohio State had, yeah, they have a horrible loss. And they also lost, you know, handily at home to Oklahoma. And the horrible loss, as we said, was that 30-plus point loss unranked Iowa. But they had beaten a Wisconsin team that's in the top five. They smashed a good Michigan State team that was in the top 15, and they also beat Penn State, which is another top 10 win. So when you put those out, all three of those to me are better than the LSU win that Alabama has, and they don't have the conference championship. Having said all that, you know, my thing is, if you're Ohio State, I think it's hard for you to – you don't have anybody else to blame but yourself because you didn't – take care of business and beat an unranked Iowa team. You already had your one mulligan when you got thumped by Oklahoma. The question I want to ask you, though, is so we both watched the game Saturday night in Indianapolis. If it's 31-10 Ohio State as opposed to comes down to the wire and they barely escape against Wisconsin, if it's 31-10 or 38-17, do you think we'd still have the same result?
It's a good question, and one I was thinking of as that game was playing out. You wouldn't think that you would need style points against the number four team in the country, which Wisconsin was at the time. You know, you would think beating 12-0, if you beat them by 1 point, that should be enough to make a huge statement. But because there was a lot of skepticism towards Wisconsin going in, it did feel like Ohio State needed to put on a show. And at first it looked like they might. They had some, I believe, four plays of 50 or more yards in that game.
Yeah, but, like three in the first half, I think.
Right, but they also had turnovers. They had two JT Barrett interceptions, and it turned into this, you know, having to make a stand at the end. And I thought to myself towards the end of it, you know, this game has become kind of like a microcosm of Ohio State's whole season, where they have these tremendous highs and these then tremendous lows. I could see the committee saying, you know what, we just can't count on them. You just don't know which version of them they're going to show up. Yeah, Alabama lost their last game, but for the most part, you know what you're going to get with them from week to week. And the comments from not just Kirby Hoka, from Bill Hancock, who's in, doesn't have a vote but is in the room, made it seem like that this actually wasn't all that hard a decision for them, that teams didn't consider them to be all that close. And that's fine. You know, you could go either way. I get it. Why did they say the other day that it was so close between teams 5 through 8 and then come around on Sunday and say, yeah, it wasn't really all that close?
Yeah, I think we get into an area with the playoff committee, and this happened last year with Jeff Long, and it seems like it's happening with Kirby Hocutt, where because this thing is so vague and so nebulous that they'll throw out little kernels, which maybe they personally subscribe to, maybe they don't. Maybe it's something that comes up in the room and they feel like they have to reflect it. I don't really know. I mean, I think so much of the presentation from that show, you know, that ESPN usually has on Tuesday nights, you know, we're trying to get a read on what we think they value. And the reality is, I'm not sure there is anything to get a read on, because it just seems like it changes so much. And it obviously it changes the makeup of the room year to year and the people who are in there. But, you know, ultimately, I think they looked and said, who do we think are the four best teams? Now, I'm in New York at college football induction ceremonies, and I run into a couple of college head coaches, and one of them asked, you know, had voted in the coaches poll before, and just said, I think you have to take into account what has already happened on the field a lot more and give it more weight. This whole, well, I think this team would beat this if they played again. And this coach said to me, that's just a cop out, because if you don't put value on the games, what's the point of playing the games? Well, and I think that's a valid argument.
The thing is, like you said, I wanted to circle back to something you said that I don't think gets enough attention. There's a lot of changes from year to year in that committee. There's a lot. Most of the people who are on it at the beginning have cycled off at this point, other than Tyron Willingham, who never seems to leave that room. And Jeff Long is still on it, even though he's not an active AD anymore. The committee chairman has changed. And so, you know, I remember the first couple years, it felt like you heard about top 25 wins every week. Now you don't hear about that so much anymore. And maybe that's
how much
why.
Do you hear about game control? Do you hear about that?
Yeah, well, that whole thing just, that was when they write the book about the playoff, there'll be a whole chapter about game control and how that spun into a whole story. The other one is, I just remember that first year when it was TCU and Baylor. And they still hadn't, you know, they hadn't flipped order yet. And he would just keep saying, well, Jeff Long I'm talking about, just remember when we get to the end of the season, that's when conference championships come into play. You know, we haven't been able to incorporate that yet. When it gets to the end of the season, conference championships come into play. And that is a huge part of our criteria. And now I feel like they're just, that 2 years in a row, they've just said, well, yeah, conference championships is something on our piece of paper that we hand out, but you know, we don't have to really look at that if we don't want to. And so 2 years in a row, Penn State, Ohio State, everybody's thought, well, they're the conference champions, so they'll probably get the benefit of the doubt. And it turned out, no, didn't really matter. We'll get back to the podcast in just a second, but first of all, Bruce, you're on this long trip to New York right now. Did you pack yourself some Mac Weldon clothing?
In fact, I did, Stu. I have a bunch of Mac Weldon underwear. And I look forward to putting it on every day just because it's soft, it's comfortable. Nothing is more annoying than sitting on in an airplane seat, just not feeling comfortable for 3 hours. It breathes. It's very soft. Can't beat it. I know you're a fan too.
Well, sure. And that's because Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping. Mack Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. And Bruce, they've got a great deal for our listeners. If you go to macweldon.com and use promo code Audible, you get 20% off. Who doesn't like 20% off?
Oh, that's a great deal, Stu. I mean, as we speak from experience, this is one of the best deals we've had. Go get up on this. You will not regret it.
It's MacWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code Audible. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they will still refund you, no questions asked. That's MacWeldon.com, 20% off using promo code Audible.
You know what this reminds me a little of? So as we've talked about a bunch of times on the podcast, we both have young kids, and there are times when I'm like just putting my kids to bed, and sometimes I'll lay on the floor next to them, and my daughter is not ready to go to sleep, and she's complaining, and she wants mommy to come upstairs for a little bit. And I just kind of convince her, if she stays quiet for 10 minutes or 5 minutes, that, you know, I'll get mommy or I'll get whatever. And eventually, you know, she'll fall asleep. And then, so the next morning it's whatever, 6 a.m. and I'm taking her downstairs. And this happened like a couple of weeks ago. She looked at me, she goes, "Hey, you didn't do such and such." And I, in my head, I was like, "Oh shit, she remembered that, you know, whatever." And it's like, that's a little bit like how I feel like the playoff committee talks to the consumers and the rest of the media is, "Hey, we're going to tell you this. You may not remember it, but we're going to tell you this for now. Let's let you go to sleep. We're going to appease you. And then when you wake up, it's going to be a new day. And this is the way it's going to be."
Look, at the end of the day, the committee is the chairman, and he's this one out of 13 who speaks for the whole committee. It might not even necessarily be how he personally feels. He's just got to sum up what happened in the room. For all we know, they got in there, and the coaches in the room were, you can't trust JT Barrett, or that Alabama defense is just, you know, they were injured. They were injured against Auburn. They're going to be back to full strength. But he can't necessarily share all of that. So, you know, it's frustrating. I think people want more objectivity and less subjectivity. But at the end of the day, somebody's got to pick. Like, I've yet to see a system. And this is the time of year when everybody has their sixth team and their eighth team and whatnot. Nobody has yet showed me a way that you can narrow down 130 teams to whatever, 4, 6, 8, without somebody, a pollster, committee, somebody has to make a decision. And that's what it's going to be. Does this, the way this played out, make you, because I think we've both been on kind of the same page before that we're fine with 4 and we don't necessarily see the need for 8. Did this way this season play out change it for you at all?
It makes me think, because the Big Ten champion got left out, and I think that the two most influential, powerful people who could leverage things would be the SEC commissioner and the Big Ten commissioner. And so if it comes at the expense of the Big Ten, I'm curious how Jim Delaney would respond to this and if he'll push for 8. In one sense, I feel like I've gotten kind of away from shore, meaning in my head, you know, I think college football is the greatest regular season, and because the games count and they all matter. And here I was trying to make a rational argument for Ohio State, which not only lost once handily, but lost twice. And once you start getting to 8, you know, then you're going to have even flimsier arguments to make. And I part of me likes the idea of having, well, you should have your conference champions in, but the number doesn't work because it's 5 compared to 4 spots. Also, I do like the idea of having a group of 5 kind of Cinderella in there. I mean, do I think UCF would beat any one of those 4 teams? No, probably not. But I wouldn't mind. I would be curious to see how, you know, would they really get blown out with this? To me, what they are, you know, remember when NIU played FSU, you know, whatever, 5 years ago? Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you get those matchups in the bowl game, whether it's like Utah back when they were in the Mountain West and they really took it to Alabama, you know, this conversation came up tonight with some football coaches as well, is, well, it's a bowl game. You know, there's a lot of people who are checked out for a bowl game. Well, you can't be, you know, if you're checked out for a playoff game, that's on you. And so I'd like to see that matchup, but I just don't know, because you're also stretching the schedule even further. And we're talking about player safety issues because the schedule is getting longer and longer. Logistically, it's hard to do. I love the 14 playoff. It's better than the BCS. I think the 18 playoff would be great, but it would come at the expense of the merits of the season, because now you're talking about potentially we have a 2-loss team. We might have a 3-loss team in there.
Yeah, I mean, who, if you had 8 teams, who would have actually gotten eliminated on Saturday? Miami, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
TCU wasn't really in it to begin with. Anyway, I think this would have been the perfect year for a 3-team playoff. You know, nobody really likes Ohio State or Alabama. So why do we have to have 4? We'll just have 3. We'll figure out a way for them to play each other. Or we could do a five-team playoff, and then the Ohio State and Alabama could play each other to get into the main draw.
I like that little, you know, whatever you call it, and logistically they could never do it, where you'd say, hey, this is the way it sets up. We're going to have, you know how like in NFL scheduling, and I'm going to butcher it, but they have like the flexibility to make a sudden change. I would love that if they had it. You know what? You guys are going to have a play-in game.
Yeah, I just think we should get to – every season's different. So just get to the end of the year, and this committee would say, all right, this year we think there's seven teams that could realistically win the national championship. So it's going to be a seven-team playoff this year. And then other years they'll say, you know what? There's only five. We need five, and maybe some years will only be four.
Do you think Nick Saban and Urban Meyer would complain that they would have to play an extra game because they'd be at a physical disadvantage to, let's say, they'd have to play in to then face Clemson?
I don't know, but you saying that made me just remember something from last night. Wasn't it crazy to see Nick Saban and Urban Meyer, who are the two kind of, I think, universally regarded as the most powerful or the most successful coaches in the country, both like basically calling into SportsCenter to lobby?
Yes.
to see these guys who've won all these national championships have to like resort to, and Urban seemed particularly uncomfortable with it, to resort to having to lobby for their team.
Urban kept on talking about, we beat two top four teams, and then I was thinking about it. Well, you're going to use the prism. We beat there were top four when we beat them. And I was like, well, be careful, Urban, because if you do that, then Alabama gets to claim that Florida State win. They were top three when they beat them. So now all the argument against them is they haven't beaten anybody of note. Well, now they have.
You're reminding me of the 2008 BCS Texas-Oklahoma thing that Texas kept, it was 45-35. And then Bob Stoops, it would be his turn to lobby. He'd say, well, you can't, if you're going to do play head-to-head, well, then we beat Texas Tech head-to-head. So what does that mean? How does it leave you feeling and just though about the playoff itself? You know, if you were to look ahead to the matchups, Clemson, Alabama again, and Georgia, Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl, do these excite you more or less or the same as previous seasons?
Maybe more, because there isn't, you know, look, I felt like anybody of those four could beat anybody. It's not. Those are real toss-ups to me.
There's Vegas no favorite.
Going to feel otherwise. Yeah, whereas, you know, last year Alabama felt way superior to Washington to me.
Right.
You know, I would not have picked Ohio State to get smashed like they did by Clemson, but they, you know, those matchups didn't feel as lopsided. I love the prospect of Baker Mayfield against Roquan Smith or Baker Mayfield potentially against the Clemson D-line. You know, I think that's, you know, you have the most exciting player against some really talented defenses. You know, I think this is a fun four, you know, and I can't wait to see how it's going to play out. But just, you know, I mean, if you're a Buckeye fan, you think this sucks. If you're anybody else, I think you're like, okay, I think these are probably the four most talented teams.
Well, I'm really, really looking forward to the Rose Bowl. And part of it is Georgia being new blood, if you will. You know, this is the opposite of watching Alabama Clemson again, which I don't know. I'm sure I'll be excited about it when it gets here, but you know, the last two were such classics, you almost want to just let them be and not add on a third where it's now it's Clemson, but it's not Deshaun Watson Clemson and it's Alabama, but they're perceived as not being quite as good as the past two Alabama teams. But Oklahoma, Georgia is, like you said, power versus power. Best offense, you know, certainly in this playoff field against a Georgia defense. I don't want to say they snuck up on people, but I think after that first Auburn game, if you were somebody who hadn't seen a lot of Georgia, you would say, oh, they were really overrated. But really, that was the only game all season that their defense wasn't just bad, but I mean, that was the only game all season they weren't dominant. They were a dominant mm-hmm. defense, and they were certainly on Saturday night. And you love those matchups where it's the soon-to-be Heisman winner against a dominant defense.
Can I ask you just, you know, there's going to be plenty of time to talk about these matchups, and there's plenty of time to talk about the other bowls, but are there one or two bowl matchups outside of the New Year Six that you're like, I'm really excited about, I'm looking forward to this game?
I don't think that as a whole, there's a lot of those in the, because one reason being, I think all of the New Year Six matchups are good. So there's no clunkers in there. So, you know, if I were to say what are the six best games, it's those six. But one that jumps out at me is Stanford TCU in the Alamo Bowl. Bryce Love against a very good TCU defense, or at least a defense that's been very good against everybody but Oklahoma.
Yeah. For me, it is the Camping World Bowl in Orlando, and it's Oklahoma State's offense, which is so explosive, against Bud Foster's Virginia Tech defense.
That's a good one.
I think that's a good back and forth. I definitely want to see that. You know, as we kind of looking at some of these matchups, it's just, I don't know. I mean, the thing that jumps out at me is, like, I was, you know, you follow who you follow on Twitter, and I'm seeing Shannon Dawson and a couple of the guys I know on the Southern Miss staff, you know, tweeting out about their bowl game. I'm like, holy cow. Fresno, you know, like, Florida State is going to play in Shreveport.
That was, I had a really bad bowl projections year this year. That was one of the few I got right going in. So I've kind of gotten used to seeing those teams' names next to each other. One thing I should note, though, is there's a lot of new bowl sponsors this year. Have you ever gone to Walk-Ons in Baton Rouge?
I have. Walk-Ons makes a fantastic hamburger.
Well, it's now the Walk-Ons Independence Bowl. I guess Walk-Ons must have expanded beyond just Baton Rouge.
Well, if Walk-Ons also wants to sponsor this podcast, I will gush about, because, you know, when I was there for the week of signing day for a couple of days, I think I had a burger from Walk-Ons twice.
Well, there you go.
One of the better burgers I've ever had. So,
now let me just run a few others by you real quick. Do you know what Overton's is?
Is it a clothing store?
It sounds like it, but I'm not sure. But anyway, it's the Citrus Bowl presented by Overton's.
So you don't know what it is?
I don't know what it is. I was wondering if you did, because it's now the Citrus Bowl presented by Overton's. Is now the Academy Sports and Outdoors Texas Bowl.
Okay.
The Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl.
The only reason I know that is because Brett tweeted about it, you know, 6 months ago or whatever, when he came out of his broken silence with Bad Boy.
You've got the day before that, you've got the DXL Frisco Bowl. DXL?
I was going to say that, though, that company that would, like, try to be FedEx, but that's DHL, isn't it, or something?
DXL is a top brand men's. Oh, interesting. Top brand men's clothing store for XL sizes.
Uh-huh.
Ah, so I see. They think that Louisiana Tech and SMU fans have a need for XL clothes. And then the one that is literally the cherry on top, the Cherubundi Tart Cherry Boca Raton Bowl.
I have heard of this company. My brother's in the nutrition business, so I've heard about it for a while.
Oh, so that's a nutritious product?
It's portrayed to be, yes. So.
Well, Lane Kiffin's FAU Owls are taking on Terry Bowden's Akron Zips in the first ever Cherubundi Tart Cherry Boca Raton Bowl. Now, all joking aside, there's some good matchups. I got one here in my backyard that I believe you're going to be at. Arizona versus Purdue. In the Foster Bowl.
Did you get that right? I don't think you got that right. I don't think Brett got it right either.
I did not get that right. That was
everybody was sending either San Diego State or Fresno State that way.
Well, here's what happened. Here's what really screwed up the bowl projection business this year. There were a couple ripple effects. One was, and I still don't really understand why Washington is in the New Year's Six. Like, look at their season and who they beat. And then look at TCU's and tell me why they had to drop TCU like a lead balloon after they lost in the Big 12 title game. So I had TCU staying in the New Year's Six, but apparently Washington had a really good week at home this week, and so they moved up to the Cotton Bowl. And so that had an effect on the Pac-12 and Big 12 bowls. The other one, though, was if you, like me, had Ohio State going to the playoff, then that left Alabama as the highest-ranked SEC or Big Ten team that went to the Orange Bowl. But when Alabama made the playoff, then that slot became Wisconsin. And now, try to follow me here. This is very complicated. If a Big Ten team is in the Orange Bowl, then the Big Ten loses its spot in the Citrus Bowl. So every Big Ten team moved down a rung, and that's how Purdue became available to the Foster Farms Bowl. If they hadn't been available, then they were going to take a Mountain West team.
Wow.
Same thing with the Arizona side of it. Everybody moved up a spot from where I had projected it because of Washington moving up. So then it was Arizona there instead of Washington State. Wow. And there's a lesson in bowl projection.
Pretty unwieldy. All right. Well, like I said, we can get plenty of time to talk about the other bowls and obviously about the playoff. Let's work backwards. So there was some I don't know, it's huge news.
Friday was the strangest college football news day in a long, long time.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that happened. Man, Tennessee story was a dumpster fire that just that caught flames Sunday and just was raging for about 6 days straight. And I don't know, man. I don't know where they go. I don't know what's going to be. We know now Phil Fulmer is taking over the ship. Maybe it feels 9 years of vindication from being forced out. He has got taken control. John Curry, the former AD, has been forced out. And, you know, as we had reported, or as I had reported, there was a lot of backstabbing and a lot of finger pointing that had been going on between boosters and power brokers there. They got Curry out of there. And remember, Fulmer wanted to be the AD when Curry got the job. Well, now he gets to be the AD. And the Tennessee fan base is very, very happy about that. The story kind of hit a weird crescendo. Maybe I'm not using the crescendo in the right form. On Thursday, when Curry had flown out to L.A. and met with Mike Leach, who was in Southern California while doing some recruiting visits, and Curry was doing his own recruiting. They met, as I had reported, Thursday night. It went very well, so well that Leach was just a chancellor signature away from becoming the new coach at Tennessee. But Tennessee brass, the new brass, yanked the plug on that. John Curry's out. There's not going to be any Mike Leach in Knoxville. And we'll see what Phil Fulmer decides to do and who he brings in. But the fan base feels like, hey, we got one of our own back in control, and they're happy about that. Are you happy about that, Stu?
I'm just blown away by the whole thing. John Curry had a chance. I understand. Like, basically, they had all lost faith in him after the Schiano thing, and they wanted to fire him. But in the meantime, he had gone out and basically recruited them a really, really good coach in Mike Leach. Like, this would be the kind of hire that would get people excited about Tennessee football. And you not only sabotage that by firing the AD, but you bring in a guy in Fulmer who, I guess, just kind of maneuvered his way into the job. And why would a coach like Mike Leach or whoever else you might think of suddenly be interested in Tennessee now that Phil Fulmer's the AD?
Well, that's definitely a concern, because now you have a former coach who was obviously still pretty chafed about when he got forced out of there. So do you feel confident that, you know, he's not going to be hovering over you if you take over? You know, a lot of people think, hey, maybe he'll hire T. Martin. T. Martin helped Fulmer win his national title. He's had success as USC's offensive coordinator. He coached in the SEC when he was an assistant at Kentucky. Very beloved by many people at Tennessee. You know, we'll see if they make that move. I mean, you know, I've heard Chad Morris's name come up a time or two. My hunch was that they would consider Brent Venables. You know, he's another guy who's at Clemson, but, you know, Fulmer has some guys who've been close to him. And there's the connection to Venables. And, you know, the name Les Miles has come up.
I honestly think he may be the best choice at this point. And I never would have said that 2 weeks ago. But he'll come. He'll do it. And the guy
it'll be entertaining.
Won at a high level.
It'll be entertaining. Yeah.
Otherwise, why would you take that job knowing that you're the 10th? We went through the whole list the other day of guys who have turned them down. They are at this point at their 10th choice.
If Les Miles gets the job, do you think he has them in the top 15 within the next 3 years?
I'm going to say no. But I don't think he'll be that far off. Like, there's certain guys you could tell me right now that would just be, I would say, that's a disaster. But I don't think he'd be a disaster.
We'll get to Sunday's news in a second.
Yeah, I don't think Fulmer, I mean, I don't think Les would be a disaster. But he has, I mean, anybody that goes in there right now is going to have their work cut out. And, you know, given the fact that his LSU run ended in large part because he fell behind. I mean, I guess if Les Miles is willing to hire a more modern offensive coordinator and let that person run that offense, then I would have a little bit more faith. But if he's going to just do exactly what he was doing at the end of his LSU tenure, you know, they could be good, but would they be top 15 good? That's another story.
So there's that. Then, not that long after that, I want to say that was, for my time, that was, you know, my story went up at 8:30, and then they pulled the plug on Curry, and Fulmer was in power. Right around the time Fulmer was being anointed, Florida State had some news. Jimbo Fisher was leaving town with the Christmas tree, and, you know, as a casualty, and he was going to Texas A&M for a shit ton of money.
I mean, the Christmas tree picture is just the fact that somebody thought to take a picture of that, and then a half hour later he was, yep, it's true, he's gone. It was outstanding. Very, very emblematic of how crazy that day was.
Yeah, I mean, look, and that's, you know, we've talked about Jimbo a bunch. I mean, I think he's one of the five or six best coaches in college football. You know,
let Texas A&M. Stop you right there.
Ton, yes.
You think he's one of the five or six best coaches in college football?
Yeah, I think so. Unless I'm going to rattle them out in my head.
Well, I actually tackled this subject earlier tonight for my forward pass column. So I'm going to list you some coaches and we're going to figure out where he is on your list. You ready?
Okay, this should be good. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, because this came up on the podcast, I don't know, last year. Where you were really
stunned. Yeah, with Ralph Russo. Yeah, almost
where
a year
I had
ago.
Him ranked. All right, Nick Saban.
Yeah,
Urban Meyer.
Yes.
Dabo Swinney.
Sure.
Chris Peterson.
Wow. Yeah, that was one I didn't think you'd get. Yeah, we're 4 for 4.
Gary Patterson.
That's close, yeah. I would have Dabo 5. I'm sorry, I would have Jimbo 5.
Jimbo 5. Okay, what about Harbaugh?
He is sliding for me, to be honest. He's the biggest slider. He's kind of slid in the way D'Antonio slid the year before.
Where is D'Antonio?
Still in the top 10.
Is D'Antonio above or below Jimbo?
D'Antonio is slightly below. Gary Patterson is slightly below. Jim Harbaugh is slightly below.
What about Whittingham is slightly below. David Shaw?
He's below those guys, too. I have him at 10 or 11.
So Jimbo is at worst you're right. He's at worst your, unless I'm forgetting somebody.
He's 5 for me. I mean, he followed a bona fide legend. He did great work.
It doesn't concern you that they've been on a downward trajectory the last few years.
I mean, the downward trajectory is really this year. You know, like, I mean, because they broke in a true freshman quarterback last year, and it wasn't like a disaster season or anything like that. I mean, they won 10 games and they finished in the top 10. So I don't sweat that. I mean, this year's been a dud, but I'll give him a pass for this year. So to me, he's top 5. Yes, so he's top 5.
What I'm getting at is I think he's a really good coach. He's a top 10 coach. I wouldn't quite go top 5. But that all that being said, you know, 10 years, $75 million. You would think if you were doing that you were getting Nick Saban or Urban Meyer, not necessarily Jimbo Fisher. I mean, this is A&M going all in. This is our guy. This is the guy to lead us to the promised land. We're so sure of it that we're going to make sure there's absolutely no way he could turn us down, and we're going to make this outrageous offer that obviously worked. But it's also going to have a ripple effect where now everybody else, whenever somebody does this, every other school with a good coach now has to go and renegotiate their coach's contract because now they're not making as much as Jimbo Fisher is.
I want to ask you this now off of Jimbo. To be a successful head coach, Jimbo needs to win a national title there within 4 years.
Yeah,
for this
I
money,
agree.
I think.
So think about the expectations that are being placed on this guy. He's going to a school that hasn't won a national title since the 1939, I believe.
Something like that, yeah. It's pushing 80 years.
So they haven't won a national title in 80 years. They haven't won, I mean, when the first year, someone's first year with Manziel, it was a really big deal.
It was the first time they'd finished in the top 5 in over a half century.
And all of that into play, and then the expectation for this guy's national championship or bust.
Yeah.
And they can't really, what can they do if he doesn't get there? They still owe him $75 million.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane money.
So let's play that out. Let's say Jimbo they get really good. Really, by the second year, they're 11-2. You know, everything's looking great, but then kind of levels off there. They're back to like 9-3, kind of like the Harbaugh thing this year. This is back to 9-3 the next year. Wouldn't that be kind of frustrating after you went to these lengths to get him?
It would be. I mean, I suspect there are some Texas A&M fans who think by year four that Nick Saban might not still be coaching. Maybe it's the SEC West is more up for grabs. I don't know. I mean, I think if you're making that kind of money with this kind of thing, you got to like average at, you know, a bad year is 10-3.
Mm-hmm. So basically, he has to completely change the bar that's been set at Texas A&M. Yes. If Texas A&M has historically been a 8-win kind of team, they have to become a 10-win team overnight.
But when you won, like Kevin Sumlin was when he won 8, they were going to fire him for 8. So that bar was changing. Now it's just gotten, the expectations have just ramped up one more notch.
Right.
Well, one other thing that kind of flew under the radar on Friday, I don't think flew under the radar, but it was like didn't get as much attention as normally would, was the Ole Miss penalties came down.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, by the middle of the day, it was already the third biggest story.
Yeah. Were you surprised Hugh Freeze did not get hit at hard, did not get hit all that hard?
That did seem like a bit of a inconsistency from some other recent cases where the head coach, whether they thought he knew or did not, that they just get penalized anyway. If he were to get another job, he would only have to sit out a couple games?
Yeah, conference games. Yeah. I mean, it was surprisingly manageable.
How long do you think it'll take Matt Luke to work his way out from this? Because they're another postseason ban. And frankly, the most significant part of that is that now guys are going to transfer.
And Shea Patterson has gotten his release from some schools. I had seen it had been reported as a UCLA, USC, and Michigan among them. Man, when you start losing him. Now, the JC kid that they have, Jordan Ta'amu, played pretty well when he took over, and their receivers are really good. But, you know, if you're an upperclassman, those kids can leave. That's a tough spot to be, you know. So, I mean, I think Ole Miss also didn't have, you know, it's dealing from the bottom of the deck to begin with in that side of the conference anyway. So, it's going to be a tough ride for Matt Luke. I know he really wanted that job. He's got it, and you know, he's going to need some good luck to kind of dig out from that from the sanctions, as harsh as they are, especially when these kids start leaving and it depletes your depth and roster so much.
So we're seeing the remaking of the SEC West, and it really is pretty stunning to see so much change in one division, with Texas A&M getting Jimbo. Ole Miss has decided to stay with Matt Luke. Mississippi State gets Joe Moorhead. Yes.
From Jimbo to Jomo, it's quite a deal.
And
in the SEC West.
Auburn, as of earlier today, appears that Gus Malzahn will be staying, and staying for a lot of money. So that means Arkansas has to look elsewhere. That has been a very quiet coaching search, maybe because there wasn't a plan B yet after Gus.
And there's an AD search that's going on too. As we're taping this, the person who I was under the impression was getting the job, I talked to somebody tonight. It was like, no, there's two other people in there still. I'm like, really? Like, yeah. So, I mean, it's hard for them to move. I mean, just as a bigger, you know, like a big picture thing on this, one of the people I talked to that night said, this is a very unusual coaching carousel. And some of that is because the early signing period has kind of thrown everybody out of whack.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's contributed to it.
Somebody was asking, this is another big development of the weekend we haven't gotten to, is Scott Frost, and big win for UCF. Obviously, people are reporting during the game that he's leaving.
Yeah, I heard they were doing that.
Oh, yes, you were one of them. People, friends of mine asked, like, why couldn't they just wait till Monday? Why did they have to announce it as soon as the game ended? And I'm like, because of early signing day. These schools feel like they can't waste even a day. They got to be able to call recruits and tell them, we have our coach. And apparently this has been in the works for weeks, and he already knows who most of his staff is going to be. So,
yeah, and that was what I had reported actually during my own game, and that some of that reaction was going around. And then, you know, look, credit to Lars Anderson, who had put out the number, I want to say like 2 weeks ago or so. And then, you know, it got around that the board had ratified. It was just a matter of him really finalizing it. But this is a, you know, look, he did, you couldn't have asked for anybody to do more in 2 years than what he did at UCF. Took over a dreadful 0-12 team and turned him into a 12-0 team. I mean, how much better can you get? Do you think 5 years from now, do you think Scott Frost has won a Big Ten title?
I do. I think he's that good a coach, and I think that that is a realistic expectation for Nebraska. Three national titles in 4 years, not a realistic expectation anymore. But obviously that division is winnable. Right now it's Wisconsin and everybody else. So you can win that division. If you get into the game, you know, Wisconsin certainly had every chance to beat Ohio State the other night. Nebraska gets into that game, has a good quarterback like he has now at UCF. Certainly he can pull that off. Within 5 years, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Credit to Bill Moose, the AD. I underestimated him. You know, I for weeks thought, well, if Florida gets to him first, he's going to go to Florida. But it turned out that he met with him. It came out today that he met with him way back on November 17th in Philadelphia before they played Temple. And then, like you said, Lars had that salary number right around that time, if you want to connect the dots there. You know, they were already way into this process by then. All right, now we get to the most fascinating coaching hire of the whole coaching carousel. You can't tell me otherwise.
I can't tell you otherwise either. Yeah, Herm Edwards. This is actually happening. Yep, he seriously, Arizona State hired Herm Edwards. The last time Herm Edwards coached in college football was 28 years ago. That's insane.
Edwards last, I looked it up, he coached in one bowl game, and it was the 1987 California Raisin Bowl.
Do you know who won the Heisman the year that he last coached in college football? Don't look it up.
I'm not going to look it up. You would think I would know that right off the top of my head. The year before, 88, would have been Barry Sanders. 89...
Ooh, this may help you because that's a clue in itself.
Shoot.
If you follow the NFL, you may be able to get this.
Well,
you want me to give you a hint?
Ty Detmer was the next year.
Stu, you're almost
Andre
there.
Ware.
Good job, Stu.
All right.
Two other fun facts. This is so long ago that Miami and Florida State were both independents back then.
Mm-hmm.
If you're predicting this, do you think which is more likely to happen? Herm Edwards is more likely to be gone after 3 years, or Herm Edwards is going to have Arizona State in the top 10?
I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone in 2 years, but if he's gone, so will be Ray Anderson.
So this is
something. That's the only way I can put it. So when the reports first started coming out last week that this was where he was leaning, it was strange enough. That this is the guy. And by the way, if you want to know why it's Herm Edwards, Ray Anderson used to be an NFL agent, and Herm Edwards is one of his clients. But the release comes out tonight, Sunday night, and it is, quite frankly, the strangest coaching press release I've ever read. Can I read you a quick snippet?
You can.
Okay. So ASU and Ray Anderson have unveiled plans for a restructured ASU football model. Named former NFL head coach Herm Edwards as 24th coach. Now, follow with me, everybody, here, because it's going to be dense. This is the second paragraph of the press release announcing their new coach. The department's new leadership model, and that's all caps, those are capitalized words, new leadership model, will be similar to an NFL approach using a general manager structure. It's a collaborative approach to managing the ASU football program that includes sport and administrative divisions, which will operate as distinct but collective units focused on elevating all aspects of Sun Devil football. The structure will allow the department to form a multi-layered method to the talent, evaluation, and recruiting processes, increase its emphasis on both student-athlete and coach development and retention, and provide a boost in resource allocation and generation. What the hell does that mean?
I was hoping you were going to explain that.
I mean, it's kind of cool in one sense in that I actually wrote something a couple years ago just for fun saying, you know what? Colleges should have GMs. These are such big, massive organizations now, and recruiting is a year-round thing, that being a good play caller does not necessarily make you a great head coach. It's more of a managerial job. So I kind of appreciate that part of it. But
so you're on board with this hire. You're saying it's one of the more ingenious hires of the season.
Not necessarily. I mean, I'm curious, fascinated, actually, to watch this press conference Monday and have them explain this. I think, in theory, that's not the worst model if you're going to have basically a CEO who then has two coordinators who are, you know, have the authority to basically be the head coach of their side of the ball. I just don't know why Herm Edwards, of all people, is the guy to do it. Wasn't a good NFL coach, has basically never been a college coach. But ultimately, I mean, I think the strangest part of it is, you know, I said this on Twitter, it reminded me of when Dave Brandon was the Michigan AD, and certainly when Steve Patterson was the Texas AD. People don't want to hear this MBA stuff. They don't want to hear business speak. They want to hear about football. How's this guy going to win football games? No ASU fan is reading that paragraph I just read and going, all right, we figured it out. We're going to win the Pac-12.
Yeah, it's just the whole thing is just nutty, I think. I don't know. We usually, you know, I usually don't grade hires, but and when people usually grade hires, it usually turns out there's a bunch of A's, a bunch of B's, and maybe one D.
Yeah.
You know, like, or whatever.
How it is for me usually.
Yeah.
But I will say I've given one F in the years I've been doing it, which is probably about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. Uh-huh. I've given one F. It was to Kansas for hiring Charlie Weiss. I feel like this one might get the second.
Yeah, it's just such a head scratcher how they've, you know, done this just because it's so long ago. I don't know, man. It's nuts.
I mean, same division as UCLA. UCLA went out and got itself Chip Kelly. That's a winning formula. Not this managerial. It almost sounded like they hired a management consultant who wrote this. It doesn't read at all like it has anything to do with winning football games. So good luck to ASU with that. Not very optimistic. Who are you less optimistic will pull this off?
Herm Edwards.
Or whoever Tennessee ends up hiring? Your answer is Herm Edwards.
Yeah, my answer is going to be Herm Edwards. I mean, short of I don't even know, a coach that I would think would have a more uphill. Now, he's taken over a situation that's not terrible in terms of they won 7 games. They've got a lot of young talent. They've got a bunch of talent.
A lot
there.
Of the fan base wanted to keep Todd Graham.
Yeah. I mean, the product on the field, it's not like they've been a disaster. You know, he's cleaned up a bunch of stuff. They've had some success. They bounced back a little bit this year. They obviously beat Washington, which is a heck of a win. So Herm Edwards walks into a pretty good situation relative to following a coach who just got fired. I just, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised.
By the way, remember another part of the plan, according to Ray Anderson at that press conference last week, is that he wants Herm to keep their current coordinators, Billy Napier mm-hmm. and Phil Bennett. If you're those guys, do you want that job?
Yeah, because I think you probably do because, quite honestly, if you're Phil Bennett, I'm not, you know, you may be tough to get hired. You know, even just on the connection of having worked at Baylor, it's not a slam dunk to get some of these jobs, knowing that whoever hires you would have to address it in some form or fashion at the press conference coming out, especially what's been gone, you know, going on in our country for the last year or two, right? Mm-hmm. You know, those issues are front and center. If you're Billy Napier, he had been a good assistant at Alabama and has had a pretty nice first year at ASU. I imagine he would have some opportunities, but, you know, this is a Power 5 job with some pretty good players. So I think, you know, if you feel comfortable with Herm Edwards, you have a chance to, you know, if you do well, for people to go, hey, you know, Herm Edwards is a defensive guy. He clearly wasn't connected on that side of the ball. That's Billy Napier was responsible for that. He'd be in pretty good position, I think, to get a head coaching job next year if it goes well.
I think those guys will basically be their own head coaches. And this may be outdated by the time people listen to this. They've already done the press conference. But, you know, from what it sounds like, Herm's not going to have much to do with the actual on-field coaching. Now, he is – I'm just reading this. Like, they have all these testimonials about him from NFL people. And all of them are – he's going to be such a great recruiter. He's going to be such a great recruiter. So, clearly, that's a big part of the job. But I think he probably is just going to leave the X's and O's to people who've actually coached college football games. So best of luck to ASU and to Herm Edwards on all of that. Tell us a little bit about, gosh, we don't have any, hey, what game are you going to be at this weekend to talk about? But tell us what you're doing there in New York.
I'm here for the College Football Hall of Fame event. I am going to be part of our Fox group that is going to be honoring our buddy Matt Leinart, who's going in from his great USC awesome. Career. There's a dinner on Monday, and then the big event is on Tuesday. So that's going to be really cool to be there for that. And obviously there's a lot of schmoozing, a lot of networking goes on, and so it should be a good couple of days. And then
a lot of eating from what I hear.
Yeah. Well, that's cause I'm hanging out with Andy Staples tonight. That was a big mistake, but yeah, a lot of eating. New York City, you get a chance to have Italian food, which if you live where I live, it's not as easy to get good Italian food there. Mm-hmm. So,
tell me about it.
So it was good. Do you have shout outs, Stu? Cause I got a good shout out.
I do, but why don't you go first?
My shout out is going to be to Petros Papadakis. And the reason for this is because he joined our crew this past weekend for the Big 12 title game. And I was like, what is he going to do? And they're like, well, they have one of those Dr. Pepper challenges at halftime, and he's going to really take over. And at first I was like, should I have felt like slighted by this? Because sometimes the sideline person handles it. And so at halftime, I'm sitting there and it's a chance to either get something to drink or, scarf down a pretzel or something. And I'm watching Petros and he is like, owning
he was on fire.
This. And this was from his Pros versus Joes, that show he does with the other show he does with Fred Rogan. He is totally in his element. And within like 2 minutes, I was like, there's nobody in our company who could do what he's doing right now. So hats off to Petros. He was the star of the halftime, and it's hard. I mean, to do that, a lot of people who are typically doing sports could deliver what he delivered.
He also was the PA guy for USC basketball for a long, long time. And I think that you saw a little bit of that. I saw it too. He's the best host or MC they've ever had for one of those halftime scholarship contests. They should find a way to get him. Dr. Pepper, if I were Dr. Pepper, I would sign him tomorrow and figure out a way to fly him around to all the different conference title games to do those, because they do them, I believe, at every game.
They do, yeah. It's impossible to do that, because I was like, I wonder who presents these checks, because it's got to be, all different people, because no one can get to all those sites.
Let's think about that for a second. He could do the Pac-12 one on Friday night.
Then and he could do
Dallas
probably the Big
Saturday
10.
Morning.
Mm.
Get him on a quick flight to Atlanta for halftime of the SEC game.
You really can't do the Pac-12. I don't think you can, because they had Petros rehearsing at 6 a.m., Dallas time.
He won't need to rehearse. He'll be an old pro by the time he does this. He'll go, I've got it figured out. He'll be Santa Clara Friday night. He'll definitely be able to do Dallas, whatever that was, 11:30 local kick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this will be the tight one. They got to get him like a Joe Tessitore-style escort to the airport. And then get him to Atlanta in time for halftime of the SEC game.
But you can't do the ACC and the Big Ten together.
Then they're going to have to pick. That's the only problem. Somebody's going to get shortchanged there. But I would love to see next year Petros do four of those diploma contests.
Diploma contests.
Sorry, it's very, very late here. And even later where you are. Tuition contests. My shout out is to the New Mexico State Aggies. They got to 6-6 the other day.
The streak is over, huh?
The streak is over. They are going to a bowl for the first time since 1960 and doing it in their last year before getting kicked out of the Sun Belt, no less. So they are going to the Arizona Bowl to play Utah State in a rematch of the last time they were in a bowl in 1960, I believe. Isn't that who they played?
Yes, and I think it was the last time Herm Edwards was in college.
Ouch. Gosh, at some point we're going to have to cover him.
I may do one of his games next year.
You may do one of his games next year, and I'm sure somebody will.
I do. You know what? I remember back in my ESPN days, we would have our college football seminar, and Herm gave a presentation, and he is a pretty dynamic speaker. Can't take that away from him.
All right, well, enjoy the rest of the week in New York, and I'm going to try to come up for air here after what's been a pretty hectic week, but continue to follow all our coverage on the All-American, and let's roll the credits. If you enjoy the Audible, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. If you enjoy college football podcasts, also subscribe to the All-American Podcast with Nicole Auerbach, Max Olson, and Chantel Jennings. Our producer is Nick Fink. Our intro song is Dangerous by Kevin and the Octaves. Download their music on iTunes and Spotify. Follow Bruce on Twitter at BruceFeldmanCFB. Follow me, Stu, at SLMandel. And subscribe to The All-American if you haven't done so already at theathletic.com/All-American. So come on, get-